Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel speeding in!
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Rolling. I'm going to turn some things around here. I'm going to put the wire that way.
So yeah, go back into the womb and start life all over again.
Speaking of that, I saw a great post on Facebook with a couple that were, they got a newborn, you know, and they're kind of just sitting around with the life dragged right out of them, you know, like they got this. You remember what it was like when your kids are new, no sleep, no nothing. Yeah. And the mother has the baby and kind of hands it off like a hot potato to the husband, you know, he just walked in and she goes, "Here you go. You left this in my womb." And Kevin Lowe, I remember when he played in New York, he had one of their kids was colic. I don't know if you've ever had
Lawton was colic.
Right. And it's just, it just sucks your dreams away, you know, for forever. And that kid was in the crib and the only way to get them to sleep was you had to have your hand on their back.
Oh, boy.
Okay. And Kevin said, so when he got home from wherever, you know, playing hockey or practice or whatever, he would relieve his wife, Karen Percy.
Yeah.
The great downhiller, silver medalist, Olympian. He'd have his hand, you know, he'd be standing beside the crib. He'd have his arm up over the rail of the crib and have his hand on the back and he would start to fall asleep. So he'd have to kneel down, still having his hand on the back of the baby. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's got stories.
Got stories about the kids. Look at it. Do you like the Elvis look, Russ?
Yeah.
The button. No. I don't know if you're like me when I get old. My clothes, I haven't shopped for clothes in years, man. Do you shop?
Fuck. We can see that.
I got something from the 70s.
You don't have to explain that to anybody.
I just get lazy. I used to love rags, man. I used to buy new rags all the time.
Well, that's why you were on the radio.
I know. Yeah, they couldn't. I did a TV spot till they said, no, you can't do it. Are you a shopper?
Not really.
It's probably
living in California, if one, it's super casual.
Right.
So there's not too many places you got to wear a suit and tie. And then, you know, it's like the weather. It's so nice. You don't need, you know, at night, I guess you need a jacket. But
well, you lived in Florida. I think you told me you just never wore anything but sandals and shorts.
You mean Hawaii?
In Hawaii, I mean.
Yeah, no, that's Aloha Friday. You wear those Aloha shirts, which I did for a second. And then I was like,
You didn't like them. Anyway, hi again, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome and him, Rusty Cortinel, coming at you with another episode of The Suspendables. Thanks a lot for tuning in. We're going great. Things are growing. We couldn't be happier with all the subscribing and listens and downloads. And that's Eddie. That's Eddie Ackle there, our guy from Elite Marketing, Elite Digital Marketing. Get it right. Rusty, it was Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
Before we talk about things, I was saying earlier today to Stevie, I don't know what it's like there, but everyone's lazy now, Russ, with their Halloween decorations. They're just using those inflatables now. They're everywhere. You know, where you just plug it in and it, I don't know, a pumpkin blows up or whatever it is. You know, I don't like it anymore.
You don't have a front yard, so you're out.
I don't. Yeah. No one comes. No.
You can't fill them up in your apartment. There wouldn't be enough room for you in the inflatable.
Those would be funny inflatables. That would scare the kids, you know. Yeah. Jesus. We talk about it every year because I always want to know. I'm you know, here for a really cool customer to get Halloween candy. You know, you want to go to that place where they give the full size chocolate bars, right, is the good one. I saw some yesterday where the cool guy in a neighborhood, he gave out candy, but he also gave every kid a hockey stick. No he bought way. A bunch of hockey sticks.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. How nice is that, right? God. What a great gift. What do they give out there? I remember you told me last year.
Well, it's pretty good. I mean, we live in a nice neighborhood, and so, you know, the people that do turn their lights on give candy, but everybody goes to Costco now, so we're all giving out the same stuff. But my one friend, Jamie Ashton, big commercial real estate guy here, just a wonderful, big-hearted, big kid person, and his Halloween, the lineup out his door is like half a block, and he has to hire security. Because when the kids come up to the door, he lets them come in twos and threes, and there's these piles. There's the bag of candy, like a whole bag.
Yeah.
That you would give, that I give out. He gives that bag to the kid. So what? It's like, whoa. Right. And so you get to pick from this pile.
Yeah.
And it's usually the big chocolate bars and all that stuff.
Right.
And then he asks you a question. He goes, how old are you? The kid will go, I'm 8. He goes, okay, questions for 8-year-olds. And then he fires him and his buddy, Peter Kleinick, fire off questions. And they've got questions in age categories, because all the way up to probably 17, because you shouldn't be trick-or-treating.
No, under God, no, 17. Yeah.
But they show up because they all know what's going to happen here. So you answer the first question, you go to the next pile, you get to grab another treat, which is some ridiculous thing.
Yeah.
If you get the third, he has three questions.
Yeah.
If you get all three right, he has a pile of iPads, Bose speakers.
Come on.
And gift certificates to In-N-Out Burger and other restaurants that are anywhere from $50 to $500.
I love this guy.
Oh. And then behind, so this is all at the front door.
Right.
And he's got big tables set up in his foyer, and he's standing behind the big, huge tables full of candy and stuff.
Right.
Asking the questions, greeting the kids. He's so wonderful. And Peter's got the questions. So we're all behind that, and he's got a catered party going on with bartenders. And
this guy loves Halloween.
Yeah, he hasn't had it the last 2 years because of COVID.
Right. So he's making up for it.
Maybe he didn't. He did. I don't know if he had it last night, but he's had it every year. So I took Gretz there once.
Yeah.
I dropped off Brooklyn. Her and Emma were going to go trick-or-treating with his nanny.
Brooklyn's your daughter? Emma's Wayne's daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. And so he goes, what are you doing? He goes, are you going to lose? I go, no, I'm going to Jamie Ashton's. And he goes, what's going on over there? I go, oh, my God, you got to come.
So, check it out.
So we go in. We go through the garage.
Yeah.
Go inside and he looks around. He goes, are you freaking kidding me? Is this somebody getting married, or, you know, Wayne making cracks? I go, no, he does this every year. And he couldn't believe it. He goes, he told me he was only going to stay for like half an hour. And like 3 hours later, he goes, this might be the best party I've ever been to.
I love this.
But anyways, it's great for the kids. It's great for the adults. He opens up amazing wines. The food is catered by some famous chef. And we just have a, you know, good old time, but last 2 years we haven't done anything. So I was home last night, ready for my friends to stop by with their kids.
Sure.
Potentially. James Wisniewski, who played in Montreal and Columbus and Anaheim, he just moved into Sherwood. He's got three young girls. And another, Andrew Whitworth, the football player, he's got a few kids. So I said, I'll have candy and adult drinks. So I made Canadian Caesars, went out and got all the ingredients to make the Canadian Clamato juice Caesars. And I made this, it's a sangria made from rosé and tequila. And they're freaking awesome. I think they're awesome. And people who've had them think they're awesome. And so I got these things. I'm all set. I'm all ready. They don't show. So
no one showed up?
No. The kids, all these kids showed, but my adult buddies didn't show. And I was a little dejected. I'm like, God, none of my friends showed up. And Paris goes, all our friends are too old. Their kids have all grown. those two families, they're too young. Their kids went to bed. So today, instead of a White Claw, I'm having a leftover Caesar from yesterday.
Well, that's funny. You say that because, you know, I grew up in a small town in Sudbury. Everybody knew everyone on the street, mm-hmm. probably like your neighborhood when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were all the same age, a bunch of kids. It was all cool. We all grew up together. But the parents took us around. Even when we were sort of getting a little too old for them to have to take us around, you know, at 13 and you know, 12, 11, 12, yeah. 13, you don't need your folks. But I finally learned that my folks love to do it. And every parent did because they all got hammered at every yeah. house they went yeah. to each. Everyone had a full bar, you know, what can I get you? You had a little shot at each place. So, you know, I remember that fondly.
I was doing that last night. So when you go to our front door, the living room, there's the living room with the TV. So we're watching the Minnesota Vikings who play right. shitty. And then beside the living room is bar. So it's one big square room and it's right in our front when you open the door. So I got the fire sure. going. I got the Halloween music outside going. I've got nice. Dawn's decor. The whole place is decorated. I'm all fired up. And we're watching the game.
Yeah.
And the kids are coming and I'm giving out candy, but I don't recognize any of the parents. And I was like, do I offer them a drink? Do I not offer them a drink?
Sure.
I'm like, I got this full bar. And then I see a couple guys looking through the window. And I thought that was kind of, I don't know. Yeah. Like if I ask them if they want a drink, they might want to come inside because now they can see the football games on. I got two TVs going.
In your place.
Monday night. Oh, yeah. We got the Sunday night football game, I should say, with my Minnesota Vikings playing third string quarterback.
Yeah.
Cooper Rush?
I don't know. I saw the tough loss for them.
And we freaking lost. Just brutal. So anyways, that was my night. I enjoyed some wine. And
of course you did.
Don, I poured Don, who works for us. I poured him two Caesars, which he loved. And I'm enjoying the leftovers right now, and it tastes pretty damn good.
There you go, man. On the show today, we've been getting a number of questions, so we love to I love to look at them and ask Rusty a bunch of this stuff. I got to read you this great story, Rusty, because I said Russ is going to laugh his head off because this kid was not a kid, but was so sharp and quick witted. I'm going to read some of these questions, but I'm sorry I don't have your names the way it came across here. I just don't get the names, but I get all the questions. But it says, my brother went to meet friends at Courtnell's Pub in Vancouver on a Saturday night CBC game. Don Cherry, Ron McLean, a bunch of VIPs were at a table. It was packed, and my brother's buddy's table had no extra chairs. My brother, Shane, went to the big VIP table and grabbed an empty chair. Someone in the next seat said, hey, that's my brother's chair. Shane said, who's your brother? He replied, Peter Nedved. This happened to be the year Peter held out. Shane replied, he's been sitting all year. He doesn't need a chair. the whole table erupted with laughter. My brother got a seat. I don't know who that's from, but that's a great story. And
After the Canucks beat out us, the Dallas Stars, in the second round of the playoffs that year, when they went all the way to the finals,
right?
I quickly grabbed my family. We had one child at the time, Allie, and Paris and I, we decided to leave Dallas, go back to Vancouver, and hang out with Jeff and the family and my parents and stuff. So we went back, and Peter Nedved was there. And he had held out, and then he ended up signing somewhere else, or what the hell? I can't remember, but he
might have gone to Washington.
I can't remember. We'll have to look it up. But
right.
I ended up going to the wives' room before every game in between periods because that's where they had food and free booze. So
right.
I'd go there, and Peter Nedved, who no longer is with the Vancouver Canucks, is going with me. And so I've been knocked out of the playoffs by the team. Peter's been, you know, he's now with a new team.
Right.
And we're hanging out in the with all the Vancouver family members and wives.
Yeah.
And we would walk from our seats to this as fast as you could in between periods to go have one beer, maybe two.
Yeah.
In between periods at the Wise Room. And the fans were abusing Peter. And I'm following him because he knows where he's going. I don't know the stadium that well.
Right.
So I'm following him and he's ducking in and out of, you know, think of yourself in a big event where you have to go to the bathroom really bad and you're trying to get through everybody or you're really thirsty like we were.
Sure.
Anyways, he's whipping through the fans and people in Canada, of course, recognize him and right away, and especially Vancouver. And they start screaming and abusing him. Fuck you. You know, you would have been here. Da, da, da. And he holds. He's taller, like he's 6'1" or 6'2" or something, takes his wallet out of his pocket and holds it in the air and just shakes his head and smiles. Like he carries it all the way to the Wise Room.
Look what I got.
Yeah. Because he got paid, you know, he got traded and or whatever and signed a bigger deal. I can't remember where he went. We'll find out. I mean, Steve will probably tell us, but. Anyways, that was my Nedved story. He was another story I heard about Ned's was
good guy or what? Did you?
I think he's a great guy. He's funny, a big smile on his face. Always had, never had a bad day.
Right.
But he wasn't playing good in New York, and they had sat him beside Kevin Lowe, in between Kevin Lowe and Mark Messier.
That'll fix you.
To try to get him to, you know, so they would rub off on him. So he wasn't playing very well, and the media in New York came up to him and started interviewing him. And they were like, hey, Ned's like, you know, the coaches have put you between two great leaders and Kevin Lowe and Mark Messier. And they're hoping this is going to help your game. And he goes, yeah. And he goes, well, what do you think? And he goes, well, between the three of us, we got 7 Stanley Cups.
Yeah. Well, at least. Yeah.
Or whatever they had, but that's the kind of guy he was. He was a bit of a smart ass, but in a good way. Like he seemed like a really, really nice guy with a big ass smile on his face and never had a bad day. And a very talented player.
Every team has one of those guys, hey, Rusty, the fast witted, the funny guy, the dry guy.
Yeah. Happy go lucky.
Yeah, I mean, Semenk was like that. You can imagine being on a team with Brett Hall or Chris Chelios. So these guys are just so quick-witted. Larry Robinson was like that, very funny. So we got a number of questions, Rusty, we're going to talk to you about today. We'll leave the serious stuff till the end of the show so we can have a little fun. This guy, his buddy bet him a case of beer. If you're from Canada, by the way, that's 24, okay? It's a 2-4, as we call it, okay? Not case of beer down there, Rusty's a dozen beer, right?
Actually, we've got cases with 30 in them, so.
Yeah. You do, for sure.
I was just looking at Bud Lights the other day. I go, should I get 30? Oh, Lawton's not here. I don't know. I'll just get the 12-pack.
And then you were back for another 12. Yeah. You should have got the 30.
No, I didn't.
This guy wants to know, I bet a buddy of mine case of beer that this question would not be asked. Okay, well, you're going to win your bet. He says, how did Jungle get his nickname? And did Rusty have a nickname that we want to know about? Well, I got my nickname from my dad. I was born in 1961. When I was in the hospital, my dad was very funny, very dry-witted. There used to be a comic strip called Jungle Jim. It was a cartoon comic strip. And he leaned over and told my mom, holding up the newspaper, said, look at, he looks just like that idiot in that comic strip, Jungle. So that's how I got my nickname. So there's your case of beer. Rusty, how about you?
Rusty.
Oh, thanks. Okay.
Howie.
Why Howie?
Mike Keane nicknamed me Howie, or he said I had a howitzer slap shot, so he'd call me Howie. Vinny from Vinny Barbarino when I had the long hair.
Oh, sure. We've seen
and
pictures.
Then
Mr. Cartier. Yeah.
Matthias Nordstrom nicknamed me Primetime.
Oh
yeah!
Oh, I love that handle
because I had the good suits going, and I played in LA with them, and I'd come into the locker room. Hey, Primetime's here!
I love Primetime.
Yeah, So those were a few of my nicknames. I can't think of any. I'm sure there were some that I never heard of.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Although there's great, there's, you know, hockey athletes are notorious for the lame nickname, right? They just do some part of your last, you know, mass threats, you know, low Z or whatever, courts, right? All that stuff. Marty McSorley, you can go back and, in fact, I think we're promoting it this week. Marty McSorley has handled people with the greatest nicknames. Okay. Oh. Marty hands out the nicknames. My all time favorite is he called a guy two people.
I know. And we're not going to mention that player's name because
no, we won't mention his name. Good- no, not. And we said, why is it two people? He said, because one person can't be that dumb. So we call him two people.
That's brutal.
It's not nice. It's not nice. No. Lots of questions, Rusty. I love this one. There was an article. Mike Bossy wrote a piece. I think he called it A Letter to His Younger Self. I haven't read it. I was trying to track it down earlier. So someone wants to know, what would you tell your younger self, Rusty?
Oh, boy.
I'm hitting you cold, with all
this. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things I would advise myself. One thing I never did when I played for all those years is I never ate breakfast in the morning. And towards the end of my career, I'd get freaking dizzy by the time practice was over. So just a health thing for I would have eaten a better breakfast before I went to practice. But I wasn't I wasn't a breakfast guy.
That's it?
No, that's there's a freaking list. You want to hear them all?
I sure do, man. Yeah, let's go.
I think I would have bit my tongue a little more. Like I. You know, I've talked about not having a father. So I was on my own. You know, I didn't go home and call my dad and say, hey, you know, so-and-so did this to me or said this to me today. What do you think? I was like, everything I did was, it was coming straight from me.
Yeah.
So I think I would have been a little more like, think about things first before I reacted. I took things probably too personally with coaches and.
Right. Stuff were you like lippy, that. Russ, in those days? Were you a little too, is that what you're saying? You're a little too lippy?
I was with my team, I was, you know, I love cracking jokes and I wasn't too quiet, put it that way. But I was just like one of the other guys having fun, you know, like we'd always tease each other. I would probably go at somebody like Peter Svoboda and I went at each other really hard and the team loved it.
Yeah.
They loved it in Montreal. And Peter like would get upset and then on the bus I would sing his national anthem like I start singing the Czech Republic national anthem, call him a communist and and then he just like he gets so pissed off and fuck you and he start ripping me in his thick accent. So he and I actually we're good friends.
Yep.
But we went hard at each other and it was fun. I didn't go after guys who didn't like it. Like a couple guys, you know, just didn't like to be teased. So you just leave them alone. I didn't like, I felt that was like a form of bullying. And when I first started out in the league, it was brutal how hard the guys were on you. And I didn't like it. So if somebody was given it, I would give it back, but
no shit.
Well, the funniest one was for me, 1997, I get traded to New York Rangers and Glenn Healy, who's a funny bastard. He's our backup goalie. I walk into the New York Rangers locker room during the playoffs. The weather's beautiful.
Yeah.
And I've got these brand new from Malibu, of all places, these blue suede slip-on shoes.
Oh, nice.
Bright, bright blue. And I get to the middle of the locker room and he goes, stop right there. And for freaking 3 or 4 minutes, He just ripped me.
Yeah.
Like, who the hell do you think you are? In blue suede shoes, Elvis Presley. Oh, my God. L.A. boy. Like, he just started.
Oh, no. Boom, 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 pounded boom. You.
And when you, like, I love that stuff. And it did. I wasn't really embarrassed about it. I was right. taking it because I knew you just had to take it. But I sure. didn't wear. I didn't wear the shoes again. Not at least not to practice.
Yeah, yeah. You wear them out. Yeah, with the blue suede shoes.
Anyway, like hanging out in the locker room is so much fun. Like I loved it. I wasn't yeah. in a rush to leave. I love being with the guys in the morning. You're all kind of waking up and, you know, stretching or getting your sticks ready, talking about the day before, whatever, the night before games. Everybody's in their civvies or whatever, you like almost like long underwear, pajamas, whatever.
Right.
Now they've got those tight shorts and stuff, but guys are having coffees, watching, listening to music, watching TV. And it's just a cool atmosphere to be in. And they're all your friends.
Right.
There might be one guy on the team you don't like, and he might not like you, but for the most part, you know, it's your sanctuary. And the fun, like the stuff that goes on in there is just hilarious. And then, you know, you all go home after, like, or sometimes guys go for lunch and stuff, but
sure.
it's sure. a great, it's a freaking awesome place to hang out. And if you're going to be in that environment, you got to be able to take some shit.
You speaking of the antics, you know, the pranks.
Oh God.
You guys are world class, but go back and listen to the show we did with your brother, Jeff. And the stuff he did to, I forget who it was on the team, but they just tormented the guy. Yeah. Mark Bergevin. Yeah.
And the big guy, the tough guy, what was the guy? And they kept hitting his Olchek? Key. No. They kept hitting his key on the
skate sharpener.
So it screwed
his car
up.
Keys.
Yeah. He couldn't get the car started.
They do it just a little bit each
little
day,
bit.
You know?
Yeah, and the guy was, go in there and he's wiggling his key to get in the ignition. Brand new car.
Oh yeah. And on and on.
Big tough guy. I can't remember his name. Anyways.
Bertuzzi? I don't know.
No, it was a big tough guy. Like a grinder.
Yeah. I can't remember. Anyway, go back and listen to that show. Rusty, pre-game, you know, game day.
Yeah.
I have heard stories where some guys show up 4 hours before the start of the game.
Chelly was always like 3 to 4 hours before the game.
Doing what?
Hanging out. Chelly and I used to get to the rink and I was single and I'd get there 3 hours before the game and he'd get there 3.5 to 4. He was always there before me. And before every home game for 2 years, including playoffs, Chelly would have a burger and I'd have a hot dog.
Lovely. Lovely. Okay, I'll tell you how stupid I am.
From the owner's suite right across the hall in the old forum.
Yeah.
So we did that. That was kind of our routine. And then
of course, I was going, when did you play with Chelly? Of course, yeah, Montreal.
Right. And I lived with him, he and his wife, during the playoffs.
How was that?
It was fine. I mean, we're in the playoffs, so we were, you know, focused on hockey and just eating, sleeping, playing.
Right.
But yeah, there's guys that get there super early and
other guys walk in half an hour before or what?
No, 2 hours. You got to be there 2 hours before or you're late.
There you go.
Yeah, there's a time frame. And then the odd time there's, you know, guys will be, they'll blame traffic or something. But the general rule is 2 hours.
2 hours. Speaking of Montreal, someone has weighed in going, Russ, how bad would this be right now? Montreal is coming apart at the seams. I disagree with that at 10 games only. I think even you, Russ, said you could give her 20 games, 15 or 20.
Well, they've got some serious injury, like, you know, some of their best players aren't playing. And so.
Right. But they sent down with their most promising player, this guy, Cole Caulfield. He came on gangbusters there last year and in the playoffs and played 20 games. And they sent him down. First of all, Russ, that can't be good in Montreal. You've talked about that being under the microscope in both towns, Toronto and Montreal.
Everybody's under pressure there, from the owner down.
Mm-hmm.
and the trainer up. I mean, everywhere you go, no matter what your involvement is with the team, your friends are your friends and your people you don't know are going to ask what the heck's going on. That's how passionate they are about their hockey team there.
Right.
And Shea Weber's got a really bad, you know, he's had some injuries. He's not playing. He's a huge part of their team. And then Carey Price, for mental health reasons, has stepped. I don't know if he's back yet, but he's not playing. He hasn't played a lot.
Right.
Is that correct? I don't know.
He's not back yet. Yeah, they don't know when. Yeah.
And with two of your best players out and some other guys, and, you know, it's a recipe for a slow start. And
right. It's falling apart at the seams. What's the next move here for Bergevin? Or is his job at risk?
He's under the gun all the time, and it just never, ever ends. I just can't imagine the stress he's feeling right now. Just they're Montreal Canadian fans are so passionate, and right. The media is on you. And so he's probably struggling to figure out what to do to fix it. But if players are injured, it's pretty tough. Like,
right.
You can't really do too much when, you know, four or five guys or however many are out.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost that one kid to free agency who was playing decent for them. So not a fun time to be in Montreal right now.
Just a reminder, if you'd like to connect online with Russ or Jimmy or engage with them on social media, find out how at thesuspendables.com.
All right. Someone else is asking here. Rusty, can you put a finger on why the Leafs haven't won since 67? I mean, the guy's going, come on. That's a long time.
Yeah, it's because it's such a freaking hard thing to win. And, you know, of course, you build and you get close and then you don't win and then you got to rebuild. And I know the Leaf fans are tired of hearing about it. I'm a Leaf fan. I want them to win. But you think back, like I can't remember how many years I said, but I think every 7 or 8 years, you know, you should have a chance at being good.
Right.
And then all of a sudden those players get old. Like, look at LA Kings. I mean, they won two cups, they went up, and then their players got old. They can't trade them because they got huge contracts. And they're just going to have to wait and be patient. Now they're building with these young, talented kids, and then it'll start again. But you make a couple mistakes. I mean, look at the Vancouver Canucks, how close they were to right. winning, and then they lose to Boston. And it's taken – they haven't been close since.
Well, same with the Oilers, man. They won in 06.
Now, the Oilers have just made Oilers have made mistakes on drafting. I mean, they've had opportunities, and they
had the first pick for 50 years in
forever, and they've just made. And that's what I'm saying. You get close, you make a mistake, personnel or signing the wrong guy, and then you're stuck.
Yeah,
and then you got to wait, and it's hard. I mean,
I was talking the other day. I said, this is the big leagues, man. This is the big leagues, right? So your scouting's got to be great. Your hiring of coaches got to be great. Your GM, your owner's got to be, you know, unbelievable.
And you got to be in the top 16 teams in the league to have a chance at the playoffs. And then you got to win.
Right.
16 games.
Speaking of that and speaking of the players, the NHL, the Players Association, Russ, someone had asked, how does it work with the team itself? Do you appoint a guy? Is there a bunch of meetings that you always have with your own team before the PA meets? Are there days when the team gets together and says, okay, what do we want to be presented at the next PA meeting or what? How's it
work? What happens is they ask which player on the team wants to be the rep. Is there anybody who's interested?
Did you ever do it?
No, they freaking. I went to the World Championships in 91, I think, after we lost our second round to Boston. Rob Blake and I were the last two additions. I went to Finland. And while I was gone, they voted me in as the player rep.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So I could start getting all these calls. It was, you know, at home, no cell phones back then, no right. email. Start getting these phone calls like, please call the alumni. We're booking your flight. And I'm like, for what? And they go, well, you're the rep for the Montreal Canadiens.
Lovely.
I said, no, I'm not. So Carbo went in my place. But they go, you know, those guys, each team has a rep or two, and they go there and they have discussions. And then they come back and they share everything with the team. And then, you know, that conversation is
like a formal meeting or something. You all get together and
no, you sit around the fucking locker room and the fucking player rep's telling you what the meeting was about.
That's formal. Yeah.
There fuck. You go. Okay. Yeah. Guys are toweling off butt naked in their stalls.
Yeah.
While the player rep's up in the middle talking.
That's funny, man.
Yeah. It doesn't get until they have to go to a, you know, when there's a lockout or there's some serious issues, it's pretty casual. Guys are, you know, you're getting brief, but it's until it gets ugly or really serious, you know, that
not much to worry about.
Not too much.
What was the biggest thing, Rusty, when you went to the show? You know, you played hockey your whole life at, you know, the high, you know, you were at Notre Dame, you know, for high school, and you've always played as a peak performer. What was the biggest difference you noticed, Russ, when you went to the NHL?
Fuck, everybody shaved.
What are these razor blades for?
Yeah, I felt like such a kid. I was a kid. I was only 18. And I just, everybody seemed so old to me. And then just the fans, like having, you know, sold out arenas and everything was taken care of. Like you're on, you know, you get your itinerary, you go on the road, and it was like, just follow the guy in front of you. And right. it totally changed from, you know, when I played junior, we were a great team, but our owner didn't buy us freaking lunch when he was supposed to on the road. And you know, it was Mickey Mouse, you know, get two sticks and one would have to break before you get another new stick from the trainer because they had them all locked up, and everything was of abundance, you know, fans, media, travel, money, everything was of abundance, everything locked, anything you wanted, you know, skates, like it was awesome. It was just like you knew you had arrived. I mean, some teams were cheaper than others back then, but the teams I played on, it was, you know, whatever you wanted. Montreal, forget about it. I mean, Bobby Smith sat beside me and he'd go through five pairs of skates in a season and I would go through like one and a half.
Always.
You know, whatever Bobby you want.
Yeah. Good Ottawa boy there.
Yeah.
Were always beers, Russ, when you played in the NHL, always beers in the locker room at the end of the game?
There was until Pelly Lindbergh died in the car accident after a game. And then they stopped, a lot of teams stopped putting beer in the room. There were a few teams that kept it alive. Vancouver Canucks were one.
Right.
The other teams, like you would, when you went to a visiting, when I first started playing, every visiting locker room after the game had 24 beers or 48 beers. I can't remember.
Right.
On ice in the middle of the room after the game. And so that was weird for me at 18 years old, coming to the locker room and there was cold beer on ice. And I don't think I ever had one when I was younger. Like when I first started, I don't remember like cracking a beer in the locker room till later in my career. But,
well, you've made up for it. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Wendell Clark and I, when we would sit at the back of the plane after games, we would have to mix our beer go half and half with ginger ale.
Ginger beer. Yeah,
nice. Yeah, ginger ale and make it half and half with a beer. My uncle called it a shandy.
Yeah, well, that's what it's called, yeah.
Yeah, shandy. So he and I would drink these shandies and, you know, we'd drink like two, three, maybe. Not many.
Right.
Four. maybe five. No, not many. But anyways, that all stopped after Pelly.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah. Died in that horrific accident, which was could have been totally avoidable, not because he was drinking and driving. It was because the person in the car turned the key ignition off and locked the steering wheel. And that's what he hit the wall. He lost control of the car.
Yikes.
Yeah. But then again, you know, I play for a guy like Pat Quinn, and he believed in men being men and being responsible. And he always told the guys, if they're ever out in downtown Vancouver and they couldn't drive home, they take a cab. They'll pay for the cab ride and no questions asked. So there were guys in the league like Pat that treated men like men. It's one of the reasons he was so loved by so many people who played for him, because he didn't babysit.
Right. Right. So what do you watch? Do you watch Netflix, Rusty? What's your favorite show? What do you watch on Netflix? What was your favorite movie, sports doc, or
really
whatever?
Into Yellowstone.
Oh, you're into Yellowstone. I watched that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You like it?
Oh, I love it. Ozarks.
Oh yeah. There we go.
Jason Bateman's a buddy. And, he and Cam Neely and I used to hang out a long time ago together, had a lot of fun golfing, and he's a big hockey fan.
Right.
I just saw him at Bel Air a few months ago, and we've been texting back and forth about golfing. And so when he gets back from Atlanta, he said we're going to play. So I'm looking forward to that.
Are they filming again, Ozark?
Yeah, I think they just finished. I think that's why we've been
waiting. Love that series.
And then Peaky Blinders. I've been watching that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That's intense.
Stevie, let's hear your impression of Peaky Blinders. Okay? Let's hear it.
By order of the fucking Peaky Blinders.
There you go.
I like all the English shows. Like, I love the Crown and what was the other one?
Downton Abbey, man.
Oh, yeah. I freaking loved all that. Both my families are from the old country. And my parents were born in Canada, but their parents were all born in England. So I just love all that stuff.
Yeah, and I do. I do too. I like the British crime document, or not docs. I like the series. Shetland is a good one, folks. Go watch that. Hinterland, Happy Valley. There's a bunch out there.
You got time on your hands.
Yeah, I got nothing but time. Still alone.
Popcorn for one. Still. Really?
It's no wonder I'm on medication.
Hey, have you thought about faking a break-in and calling the cop?
Oh, that's funny, Rod. You know what? That's hurtful. Okay. I'm just getting over this stuff. I've got you to remind me every day. What about was Modano faster than you? The only guy in the league?
No, he wasn't faster than me.
There you go. That answers that question. Okay, Rusty, you know, I should have been in the NHL.
You were.
Yeah. I was a groupie, the male groupie, man. Yeah. Number one groupie.
Coattails.
Yeah. Took all the rebounds. were there any guys, Rusty, that you played your minor hockey with, your junior hockey, that you looked at and said, this guy's going to be unbelievable, but never got the notoriety, Russ? Are there names of guys that you can think should have been in the NHL, but never were for whatever reason?
Yeah, there's a kid I played with, David Campbell. Man, was he a good player. And then he and his dad decided he was going to be a golfer instead. And he took, I think, a year or two off, and he just never really got it back. But he was a stud. And then, you know, played against some. Allie Cook was a great player when I was growing up. It was like Cliff Ronning, Allie Cook, and myself, and a few others in BC at that age.
Wonder why they didn't get why they.
It just happened. You know, it happens. It just sometimes, you know, there's distractions. Sometimes you lose interest, get tired of it. Others is sometimes people peak. And then they, you know, they don't improve or grow or whatever it is.
And conversely, guys who were supposed to make it, but then went in the league and just took a shit, you know?
Yeah.
Alexander Daigh is the biggest example I remember. Remember that guy in Ottawa?
Yeah. And a player that that was really good in junior and could fly was Ken Yaremchuk. And,
oh, I remember that.
Yeah, man. He was an unbelievable player, and it just didn't work for him in the NHL. And you know, there's lots of guys that, you know, got there, and it just sometimes it's circumstances too. You go to the wrong team, you get the wrong coach, there's three guys in you know, first, second, third line. You got three right wingers in front of you. You're on the fourth line, but you're not that kind of player. I mean, there's a lot of variables,
right?
That hurt people along the way. My oldest daughter, when she won the national title, and then the next year they were favored to win, they didn't. 4 years of college, she could have went to the U.S. or Canada soccer team for the Olympics that year for tryout.
Yeah,
and she said, "I am done. I do not." I'm like, "Oh my God, it's only in 6 months." Like, this is what I'm saying to myself. And she just was like, "No, I don't want to play anymore. I'm done." She said, "I've been doing this since I'm 9 years old. I don't like it anymore." And that happens.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, Rusty, before we go, I usually do all the shout outs, but you've got a couple. Lots of people you know who are listening to the show.
So I mentioned an old teammate from when I was a kid, Dennis Mitchell, and his younger brother Daryl played with my brother Bruce, and his son Gray is a baseball player and living out in South Carolina. Commented, he DM'd me on my Instagram and said thanks for the shout out. And anyways, the Mitchell family, they were great to me when I was a kid, and I played hockey with Dennis. And anyways, Gray wanted us to say hello to his dad, Daryl. So there you go, Gray. Thanks for listening, pal.
Yeah, thank you. If you want a shout out, let us know. You can email us.
Oh, fuck. Here we go. We should have a drum roll for this.
Could you imagine if the marketing people are trying to listen?
There we go.
There it is, the drum roll. It's thesuspendables@gmail.com. Is that right?
Wow.
Did I get it right, Steve?
thesuspendables@yahoo.com. Oh. Speaking of Yahoos.
Yeah, speaking of thesuspendables@yahoo.com. Drop us a line. Go to the website, thesuspendables.com, with all the shows are up there. And we'll be back next week with another epic episode of The Suspendables. Take it easy, Rusty. Have a good week.
Attaboy.
See you later. Have that Caesar. Gulp that down.
Thanks for being with us. Please be sure to subscribe to The Suspendables today and share the show with your friends and followers. And find out everything you need to know about the show on our brand new website, thesuspendables.com.